from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their 6 pools on 3 different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
89.
Now, it's Jeffrey Wright and Company.
Tell your story.
Live on Memphis' sports station, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen right here on 92.9 FM ESPN, 680 AM as well. You can always keep up anytime, anywhere on the Odyssey app. Go download the Odyssey app today to stay up to date on all of the great 92.9 FM ESPN content. Dennis Fuller's producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My company this week is the executive producer of The Gabe Kuhn Show. You know I'm on Twitter. X at CDunning929. Connor Dunning, good day, sir.
Good day to you, sir.
Connor, it was good, I think, honestly, to have football back last night.
It was great.
You know, I think we kind of nailed it. It's like, it's frozen pizza. It was good. I actually thought, by Hall of Fame game standards, I thought it was a pretty clean game.
Did we bump up into Domino's territory? Little Caesars? Little Caesars, a happy middle ground between Domino's and Frozen?
I'll go Pizza Hut.
I'll take Pizza Hut.
Because I rank, if we're going in that tier, I think I go Domino's 1.
See, I ride for Little Caesars. I think Little Caesars is better than people give it credit for.
I'm between Little Caesars and Papa John's.
That's tough.
Papa John's thin crust is criminally underrated.
See, I have fond memories of Papa John's because it used to be behind my dorm when I was at UT Knox. And if you walked down there at around 11 or midnight, if pizzas hadn't been picked up, they just handed it to you. So I associate it with free pizza. So it's elevated a little bit in my mind. But that's, to be quite honest, probably the last time I had Papa John's. It's been almost 10 years.
All right, I'm ready to go. Domino's, Little Caesars, Papa John's, Pizza Hut.
I think that's the correct order. Pizza Hut in the 90s, elevated. Yeah. Early 2000s, elevated.
I don't know what they did. I completely agree.
Like, if I'm eating underneath that lamp thing that they have, might be number one.
Yeah, I don't know.
Salad bar? Give it to me.
I don't know why, because like you would think if you're going in your 30s and you're like re-eating the pizza of your youth, like I would think I would have Pizza Hut higher, but every time I do pizza, I'm like, I'm done.
Don't even get me started on CeCe's.
That didn't count. CeCe's is just there for the chocolate breadsticks. That's all.
Or whatever that kind of clear one was, but it tasted like the nectar of the gods. I have no idea what was on that pizza, but I would eat it all day.
No, CeCe's isn't even in this conversation. But yeah, I think I'm ready to say I'll elevate it to Pizza Hut. And the other thing that I noticed that football was back, Connor, I think I saw my first rival fan base trying to get a rumor going about a hurt player on the other team.
Really? I think I missed this.
Yeah, Mississippi State fans were spreading the rumor Jack's dart towards ACL.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we're in rumor season already, too?
And then...
Oh, football's so back.
Ole Miss's Twitter account, like, did a...
Did Lane tweet?
Ole Miss's Twitter account had a picture of Jackson today. So, like, it seemed like it was all related. Like, to me, that's when you know it's really back. When you get the online message board rumors about your rival, like, that's... I'm here. I'm ready to go.
Oh, Lane Kiffin did retweet a story about Jackson Dart.
Yeah.
So I think they're
playing into it. Yeah, you've had to figure Lane was involved somehow, some way. We'll do what we usually do. We'll talk a little bit about last night, but we'll also start the show with what we're going to be talking about on Monday. Blake Topmeyer is going to join us 2:35. We'll talk SEC football with him. 3:05, we will get into the list. I think that's when we'll discuss the report from Sports Business Journal about the Grizzlies, Bally Sports, the future, whatnot. I think the preview would be Connor and I absolutely nailed the proper take about where would the Grizzlies games be. We nailed it on Wednesday. I think that was the day we talked about it. Nobody knows.
Well, we specifically nailed
somewhere.
It in how we said we cannot trust Bally whatsoever, and then immediately they proved correct that we cannot trust them.
Skip is leaving FS1. It's his last day. I think it's interesting how Skip used to consume so much oxygen, and I don't even feel like that's even being discussed.
Yeah.
So we'll get into that. Apparently probation's still a thing. We'll tell you who got put on probation today. I didn't know we even were doing rules anymore, but that's still apparently a thing. We got the new Big Ten, the updated Big Ten Maps commercial. The ad.
I did see this.
We got that one updated. We'll discuss all that during the list. We'll get into our games of the weekend and more. But again, football was back last night. We had the Hall of Fame game. It ends up getting postponed, I think, midway through the third quarter for rain. But there were a couple of things. So obviously the number one first look, if we were, was what is the new kickoff thing going to look like? The kickoff setup. And we start the broadcast with Joe Buck giving us like a 5-minute monologue on all the rules. I actually thought Joe did a pretty good job.
I've always been a Joe guy.
I have no problems with Joe. I'm with you. I think Joe kind of fell into the... Because my wife was asking me about it. She's like, what is all the Joe Buck hate? And I was like, well, I think it's kind of like Nickelback in the sense that everyone just on the internet started making the same joke, and that was so early in the internet that it just kind of like got into everyone's head that it's law. Like, that was just kind of the natural stance. I don't really feel like there was all that much Joe Buck hate.
I don't hate that take. It's from what I've seen, people don't like that he doesn't get hype in big moments. He allows the crowd to do the work for him. And to be quite honest, I've always enjoyed hearing the crowd and the crowd pops and the fans freaking out in the stands. That's what Buck does. He gets quiet in giant moments, and I think that's why it bothers some people, because
I believe the term Connors lays out. I'm with you. I like that.
Yeah, I like it.
And I've always thought Fox has the best audio. Whenever they're broadcasting, their audio always sounds phenomenal. And, like, I'm with you. Like, what's part of the reason we watch sports? Like, the roar of the crowd. It's, like, one of the first things that makes us love sports.
I will go back just to feel things sometimes. Go back and listen to the 2004 calls he did during the Red Sox-Yankee series. Just to feel happiness.
Thank you for not including the World Series.
No. No, we're friends.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
It's your birthday this weekend.
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Super, super excited birthday week. I told Calkins this morning. It's like, I am glad that my birthday's on a Saturday, because when your birthday's on a Saturday, it gets glossed over, and you don't have to sit there and answer like 55 messages every hour. It's like, ugh, it's the best. Oh, yeah, 36. Woohoo. The other thing I was thinking about with Buck last night, it's still, to me, when you're in this day and age where I feel like so many broadcasters are kind of becoming the same thing. It's mm-hmm. like indistinguishable. If Buck's on the game, it still feels like a big game.
Yes, 100%.
And so, like, to me, like, that's a huge part
of it. Well, we almost lost him, too. I'm glad that he's back. Like, he had that, his vocal cords
got addicted to hair plug surgery. And somehow
are you serious?
And that somehow, like, affected his lymph nodes.
That's what happened?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh,
his
wow.
Didn't even know that could happen. His words, not mine. Yeah. Yeah, that's we did almost lose him.
Well, I'm glad he's back.
So we had the kickoff, And I think overall it's going to wind up being kind of much ado about nothing. I was very curious because if you watched it in the XFL, it would result in a lot of big returns and like very at a pretty high rate. I think the thing that we noticed last night, even with it out being the starters, and obviously special teams is more times than not, it's not starters. That might have been what we'll see for the Texans and the Bears as their special teams unit on week one. But the thing that was very obvious right off the bat is NFL speed is different than XFL speed.
Correct.
And more importantly, the speed everywhere. Like, because you saw, like, they got down the field so fast, and it's like, okay, bam, at the 20, whatever. I still contend the loss of the onside kick, and I get it, you can announce an onside kick and get it.
Boo.
That's like the most electric play in sports. Like, honestly, think about it from, like, with all due respect to Saints fans, I don't remember any of the Breeze passes. The most memorable play of the game, the two most memorable plays of the game are the onside kick and the pick six.
I don't like that you have to announce it. I find that quite silly.
I think if you're going to do this, like, my thing is, this is the problem with the NFL. It's like, if we're going to start to do, like, the nerd suggestion, we don't go full nerd. Like, you have to do it the whole way. You have to take this kickoff with the 4th and 18 play. Like, if you want to, if you're down two scores, you want to go for it, you get the one play. It's 4th down and 18. I think it's from, like, your own 20. And to me, like, if you're going to put this kick in, you have to do that. You have to give, we have to have that hope of, even though we're down two scores and haven't moved the football all game, we got that one touchdown, and we have to have that faith that it's still not over yet.
The feeling that you have before you know your team is about to have an onside kick is probably the most hope you have in your entire life, and it feels so euphoric. It is probably what drugs feel like at the highest level, and then it immediately
goes
away.
Drugs can do
but
that.
I'm chasing that high every single time, and the NFL is taking that away from me. How dare they? How dare they?
That feeling when that second hop happens and the ball's in the air and you're like, we got a chance. You see a guy breaking down the sideline. You see that it's gone over the front line. Like, that feeling.
Like, oh my God, it's going to the fullback. That's the best feeling. When you know it's going to a brick hands.
Correct. Now, I do understand the argument. Hey, if your team was down two scores, maybe you didn't deserve to win. That's why we play sports. Like, it's anything. Like, it's taking away, I feel like, fun plays. I also don't really know if this is actually, like, in the end, I don't really know what this is actually going to accomplish. I think they wanted to have more returns. It was too many touchbacks, but I don't know, man. Like, this feels like we tried to fix a problem that didn't happen.
So I have the official stats of the kickoffs. None of the 8 kickoffs were returned beyond the 32. 3 were brought back to the 26, a yard further than the old touchback.
Yeah.
And there was one touchback that came out at the 30. Overall, I think I'm still pretty neutral on the kickoff rule. I do think that as I am getting older, I am realizing that I'm a bit resistant to change in sports. So I need to just give myself a few weeks to get used to something before I can make a true judgment. A big thing about the new kickoff rule is it kind of just looks weird when they're doing it and how
it
they
looks
line
like
up.
Rugby.
It looks like rugby. It does look like rugby. So I think that I will eventually get used to it, and I think we will all eventually get used to how it looks, and then we will be able to truly judge whether or not it's good. I do agree with you, though. The speed of the two leagues are very different,
yes.
And I do think that that may not have been taken into consideration as much.
Because when you watch XFL, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier this week with Reggie Bush. Everyone kind of did the same move. With the big returns, everyone did kind of the same move. You'd press the ball up the field, and then you try to bounce it wide to the wide side of the field, the Reggie Bush move. And there wasn't enough team speed. There wasn't enough team speed to you know, if you put your fastest guy back there, there wasn't enough team speed to catch him. Now, you left a lot of big returns.
The Bears receiver, Colin Johnson, commented on it, and he did make a tackle on the opening kickoff. He said, the speed and timing is drastically different. It's so much faster. I do think that it will eventually lead to some exciting plays. I don't want to be quick to judgment on it after the Hall of Fame game that didn't really include any star players.
No, I'm with you. I think also, like, it's not one of those ones that, like, it's going to, like, change how I feel about football, but I still think my net neutral is going to be like, did we really need this?
That may be where I end up landing is like, did we really need it, but did it really make a negative impact on the league? Probably not.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Like, in the end, we're going to focus a little too much on it. The other thing that I wrote down is, when did the Texans start wearing the Falcons uniforms?
Yeah, it was black and red.
That wasn't TV problems.
No, it definitely looked black.
Okay, like, I understand. We really did this. This was hot in the streets in the first decade of the 2000s. We started deciding we needed black on everything, uh-huh. And everyone went to this neutral color. I think if one of your base colors is navy, you don't get to do black. It's too close. Like, it's fine. Like, if you're royal blue and you want to throw black in there, sure, have at it. So be it. But when you're navy, it's just too close to black. Like, I was sitting there wondering the whole time. I was like, and then it also looks weird when you do the black numbers with the navy helmets. Did not care for it.
It took me a while to notice that it was black, but when I did, I was like, that's a curious thing. I wonder why they went with that and not the navy. It's because you would expect it to be navy, red, and white.
The other things, we got the Hall of Fame introductions, and then Mongo McNeil's wife, because he has ALS.
Mm-hmm.
Was she like 3 Chardonnays deep? Did you see her walk out?
No, I did not. I did not see this. But
see if you can look it up. Like, she was like popping her chest. Like, she was like trying to get it. Like, she, very seductive. it was wild. That was like, it looked like, you know, she had a couple of glasses of Chard and was hitting the dance floor.
Hey, why not? She's been through a lot. She had a fun night.
Yeah, it was,
let her do her thing.
That was something else.
Team Mongo headquarters.
That was quite the moment. Anything else strike you from the game? Because to me, like, that was about all. Like, I thought
Mills looked good.
I thought it was probably helpful that both Mills and Bagent had played, because I thought the game was fairly competent. Like, for usually that game is very clunky, disoriented. Both, like, it looked like football.
It looked like football. I also forgot that Cam Akers was on the Texans.
I did not know that either. The Texans have a lot of former Rams. I think Skoronek's over there too. Did not remember that
overall,
either.
Overall, though, it scratched my itch for football. It didn't look as clunky as most Hall of Fame games do, and most notably because we actually had good quarterback play in this game, where usually they're throwing picks all over the place. It was a really good return to football. It had a kind of a twist on it because you had the new kickoff rule. I really enjoyed my night watching it. I'm glad it's back. I cannot wait for Hard Knocks. Now I am in full Hard Knocks is going to be amazing mode.
Oh, we had the other note. Shout out to Troy Aikman. That ESPN check's going to clear. When he was trying to promote that he thought that Caleb should have played, like, I just took a series or two. I think it'd be really good for him. It's like, that's exactly what ESPN needed.
Does he do this to most rookie quarterbacks, though? It seems like Aikman is a big, you have to prove it to me guy before I give you any ounce of respect.
I think it was
not necessarily in a mean way.
I didn't even take it as like a. I did not take it like as a welcome to the NFL moment. I took it more as like, hey, we're going up against the Olympics. But if Caleb Williams was playing,
oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, like, okay, that makes much more sense.
I think that would have popped a pretty good number.
Yeah,
that was how I took it.
I also did rewatch the Olympics last night because it was just an awesome day.
All right, remind me again. So we had the Kate Douglas race. We had Gabby.
It was Ledecky. The big ones were the ones that I rewatched because my wife hadn't seen them. We watched the Ledecky race where they got silver in the relay. And then we rewatched the Olympics final. Or not the Olympic, the Olympics.
The
gymnastics. The gymnastics with Simone and Suni.
Yeah. In the rewatch, I started feeling a little bit worse for the Brazil girl.
A little bit. Well, do you know
that? That was kind of close.
Do you know the controversy that's happening on Brazilian Twitter that I somehow waded into the waters of this?
There's another Olympic controversy?
Yes, oh, God, we don't have to get into those. No, but the quote-unquote controversy is that, and to the Brazilians' credit, most of them landed on the right side of this. They were really pissed off that Simone, on one of her flips, kind of
stumbled.
She didn't stick it like the Brazilian
Not
girl
clean.
Did. It wasn't as clean. But people had to point out to them, well, Simone's doing something that literally nobody else on planet Earth can do except for her. So if she stumbles a little bit, the difficulty is higher. So it's going to be a higher score And the Brazilian, she did an easier move, and even though she stuck it, it doesn't give you a high enough score. It's like shooting a two-pointer versus a three-pointer.
Well, yeah, I mean, they show you the difficulty
score. So they were losing their minds at first when it happened, and then some people came in and explained it to them. But I was having to do the translate tweet for basically an hour last night because I got into
it. You're not fluent in Portuguese?
I am not fluent in Portuguese, even though I used to have somebody who spoke Portuguese in my family, but they are no longer a part of my family.
Ah.
And fun story about this, my cousin, we didn't, so my uncle married a Brazilian for a little bit, and when she first got introduced to our family, my cousin went to Christmas dinner with all of us, and he was very excited because he had just finished a semester of Spanish in college, and he did not realize that Brazilians
not Spanish.
Did not speak
Portuguese,
Spanish.
Yeah.
And all of us knew this at the table, and we just allowed him to speak Spanish to her the entire night. And then as she was leaving, we just leaned over and whispered into his ear, by the way, Brazilians speak Portuguese.
In fairness, it sounds close enough.
They are close. There is some crossover.
It's, yeah, close enough.
Yeah.
There you go. So what are we going to be talking about on Monday? All right, so let's go through the possibilities. So Team USA will play basketball on Sunday. Correct? So we have the last group stage game, Germany on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
I assume somebody else that's been starting's not gonna play again?
Maybe. He came out today and he basically said that the lineups are based on roles. And it's like, thank you, man. Yeah, we had no idea that's how you set lineups with basketball.
Break that down for me.
Yeah, but what do you mean? What do you mean, roles? You mean the tall players play in down low and the guards play up top and have the ball in their hands.
The bigger guys,
the shooters are at the perimeter.
Guys don't play guard.
It was just every time he speaks, I'm like, just give Spoelstra the team.
It's just an exquisite. It does. It also, you know, like we talk about how on offense that at times it feels like they just take turns. You do realize now it's like, oh yeah, they just take turns coaching.
Well, I have seen. There have been some enlightening TikToks, and I do have to say, the offense runs a little bit more smooth than I've been giving it credit, but I don't necessarily think it's because of Steve Kerr. Some people have pointed out that some of the offensive sets that they are running are very similar to what the Miami Heat do, and I'm like, duh, of course they are. There is specifically a move where they are cutting across the lane, and they are basically making people choose between whether or not you want to guard LeBron James or Steph Curry, and that is just you're choosing between death and death. So that is a great move for Team USA, but let's run that more. Let's do that more. Let's have them play more on the floor together. So again, it's all of this is for naught, most of this complaining I've been doing about Steve Kerr, because they should win the gold. They've won their games by double digits. They've taken care of business. It just has been a little bit more clunky than I think I had hoped.
Okay, so I think here are the options I think that we could be talking about with Team USA. Is Embiid making them worse?
Yes.
That feels like it could be a legitimate talking point.
I think he's hurt.
Well, I mean, I still don't understand why he's playing.
Also, I think he's hurt.
I do not understand. If I'm the Sixers and I saw that knee, it's like, can we get that fixed?
Well, are we supposed to believe he had all of these injuries in the NBA playoffs, which he did? They were legitimate injuries that he was going through.
We saw that. Remember the knee brace he had on his Marc Gasol's night?
You're telling me that they're just gone all of a sudden, and he's not fighting through those to play for Team USA? He wasn't fighting through those in the exhibition games and all those practices? If I were the 76ers, I would say, listen, man, we understand that you want to play for Team USA. We respect that. You will be able to probably play again in 2028. Please just take this summer off. We are putting a lot of money into this team, specifically into somebody named Paul George. We have got to be healthy for the season. It is the season that will kind of make or break this regime in the front office. Like Daryl Morey, it feels like it's not just Embiid's legacy that's on the line right now. Daryl Morey's is too. A lot of people. Nick Nurse, it's Paul George's, Tyrese Maxey's early in his career trying to get something done. They have got to make sure that this season goes well for them. I don't understand how they didn't just sit down with him and say, we are uncomfortable with you playing. You have been out of shape and you have been injured heading into every single season. Please just give yourself a break. Give yourself a break so that you can be playing in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I guess at a certain point, it's like, hey, man, if he wants to play, what can you do?
I guess
like,
so.
Like that.
That's why it's...
It's bizarre to me that we saw him look like the form that he was in at the end of the playoffs and then that he's playing now.
Right.
Like, I would have figured... that's the old take the summer off.
I will say part of me does feel a little bit bad for him because I do think that he feels pressure to do this so that he can get a win on his resume so that people get off of his back. Because I think that in his head, he's like, if I win a gold medal for Team USA, it will get people back on my side, which I understand that line of thinking. It's just but ultimately with NBA players, what do you do in the playoffs is all that matters.
Isn't it a cheaper version of Durant going to the Warriors?
Maybe.
Like, it's not quite as bad because it's not as if Cameroon did not have the opportunity. So,
right.
Like, I understand that. But it does feel like the motivation for this is to, quote-unquote, go get a win. And it's like, I can't think of anything cheaper than joining Team USA in the Olympics to go get a medal. I mean, what, we've lost... Since the NBA, we've lost once?
Once, yes.
Like, it's not as if Cameroon was in the last Olympics and lost, you know, a heartbreaker to Team USA. Like, to me, like, that's why Durant's is the ultimate cheapest one.
Yeah.
Like, you were in the Western Conference Finals, you had the lead in the fourth quarter, and you went and you joined the other team. Like, that's super cheap. But, like, I think the reality is we all don't think of Kevin Durant's two titles. Despite the fact that he had every claim to being the best player in the series, like, we do not think of those titles the same.
No, we don't. No,
like,
we don't.
I think there's a legitimate argument. Dirk's one title more significant than Durant's two.
I would make the argument, and I have for a while now. I think that Dirk's ring, in terms of level of difficulty and who he had to beat, might be the hardest ring of all time. It's up there. It is the teams that they beat were insane getting to the finals, and then they beat the Miami Heat.
Right. With LeBron in his prime. Like, I get it.
It was
like,
Hall of Famers.
That was first year.
They beat Kobe on the way there.
First year LeBron, but, I mean, to me, it's... Like, I really think if Durant stays in OKC and just wins one title, we would have thought much more highly of that than we do of the two Warriors titles.
And to your point, look at how we talk about Dirk now.
Yeah. Well, it's just like that one title just seems like a much more significant accomplishment in our eyes.
No, 100%. Because it was the level of difficulty, and he stayed with the team. It was the story. It was the culmination of his entire career in Dallas. He became a hero.
To me, it's the same thing with, like, LeBron's 2016 title feels like the most significant of his accomplishments.
Without a doubt.
And you can make the argument that, like, he put just as good of a super team together to get that one, but it doesn't feel nearly the same as the Miami Heat ones.
No, and because he beat...
It's who he beat also.
It's also who he beat and how he beat them.
Yeah, yes. And, like, we don't care that Draymond was suspended for a game.
No.
Like, we don't, like, it's like,
well,
yeah.
Draymond also kicked people in the ball, so...
Well, yeah, but it's also, it's like...
That's Draymond's fault.
It's like, yeah, it's fine. You still he won game 7 on the road.
Right.
And,
like,
we saw it.
Yeah, he won game 7 on the road. Yeah, you're up 3-1.
Correct. We saw that. Like,
don't get me rolling, Jeffrey.
Yeah, don't get suspended, Draymond. That's not really a LeBron problem.
Yeah, so Dallas, they beat Portland, which was a very good Portland team. Then they beat the Lakers. Then they beat OKC. And then they beat Miami. God, that's insane.
No, it's just, I just feel like this, what Embiid's doing is like a cheap version of what Durant did.
It is absolutely that. And that's why I do feel for him a little bit. Because you can tell that he has that pressure on him, and he is someone who wants to be liked, and that is all of us in life. He, unfortunately, though, just has a bigger spotlight on him because he is the star of the Philadelphia 76ers, and he is an, you know, MVP winner in the NBA, one of the best players, and he has gotten to the point in his career where he has moved on from the, oh, quirky Embiid, and he had Doc Rivers and Ben Simmons, so he couldn't get it done, and now it's like, all right, man, you've got to get it done now. If you want to be in the pantheon of NBA greats, if you want to be talked about with the centers of all time, you've got to get it done. And it starts with simply getting past the second round.
Yeah, I guess so. Like, I'm with you on all that. The problem, though, is who in his camp said, you know what's going to get people off your back?
I think he said it.
Like, that's a complete lack of understanding of the way, like, fans work.
I can't imagine Maury sitting down with him and saying, you know, it's a good idea.
No, I definitely, well, I think Maury's pissed. Well, I guarantee the Sixers didn't want this.
Hasn't Paul George said something along those lines?
I don't know. I don't listen to it. What's Podcast P?
Podcast P. It's pretty good. Not bad.
I'm sure it's fine. Like, I see clips of it from time to time. You will never guess which country's leading the 10,000 meter right now.
What's that?
You'll never guess. Ethiopia.
Oh, yeah.
The guy leading the charge.
It took me a moment to get the sarcasm. I was about to say, like, the Swedes?
The guy, the Ethiopian right now that's out in front, like, yeah, that looks like the guy that would win the 10,000 meters.
I was literally trying to think of the whitest person I could have, like, the English.
No. I mean, there's only 21 laps to go.
The Scottish.
Let's see. Anything else that we could be talking about? Because doesn't feel like Olympic golf has taken off.
Don't think so.
Although, I will say, the leaderboard right now is kind of interesting. So you got Xander, Fleetwood are at the top. Rahm's kind of there. Scheffler's not too far back. Like, it could be one of those ones where, yeah, it's not going to feel like a major, but it could wind up being an interesting Sunday.
Are we going to be talking about the medal count? Because Team USA is now in fourth place. Because they have 9 golds, or Australia has 10, France has 10. And China has 13.
You mean the gold count, correct?
The gold count, yes.
Listen,
if we don't end up winning the most gold, which I think that we will, even if we don't, though, I'll just switch it to, well, total medals. That's all that matters.
Yeah, but then that's you got to fight we're just the best losers.
because we have the most silvers?
Yeah. And the most bronze.
We're the best overall, and we're the best second place, so take that.
Yeah, but like we're a country that defines ourselves by winning.
We're going to win.
Like that's going to win.
Track just started today.
Fingers crossed.
Did you see Richardson? She blew him out of the water. That was incredible. And we set a world record. Yeah, we're coming.
Yeah, I mean, I assume when the track numbers start, that's when we start boosting our numbers. All right, let's talk some SEC football. We'll do that next with Blake Topmeyer. Stick around, listen. Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, 3-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Blake, I think football is officially back because we had our first internet rivalry fake injury moment. Mississippi State boards were saying that Jackson Dart had a torn ACL, and then, of course, Ole Miss went on social media and had fun with it. But to me, like, that's when you know, like, football's back, baby.
I missed that, so I'm glad you filled me in with that. That's a great Egg Bowl moment. I mean, Yeah, it means football's back. It also speaks to that rivalry, I think. Like, there are very few, as you well know, you know, having covered Ole Miss, like, there are very few rivalries in the SEC that have that Ole Miss-Mississippi State nature. I mean, there's a lot of great rivalries in this conference, but when you have that in-state nature, and it's just pure hatred.
I covered it during what I think is actually the peak of the hatred, too. The Mullen Freeze era, it was just, I mean, it was unbelievable. It just consumed everything. And it was like, it's, you know, it's the type of rivalry where, like, the opposing fans don't even like to go to, like, the road game. It's like that. It's that kind of nasty.
And that was, you know, the era you were covering it, obviously, was when both programs were really good. Mississippi State was number one in the first college football playoff rankings. They were there was the Sports Illustrated cover back when magazine covers were still cool, still a thing. And Mississippi got displayed on the cover, right? Both schools were kind of featured in the headline, I think. Yeah, I mean, that was, I'm sure, a great era to cover. I've covered now, I think, three straight Egg Bowls, and some of them have been a little more relevant than others, but it's still, it's an awesome rivalry to cover, as you well know. And even, you know, even when one team's not having that great of a season, it really doesn't diminish the game. I mean, I think the Iron Bowl is on, it's similar. Normally the stakes of the Iron Bowl, I guess, are historically higher, like in the grand scheme of things, in the national championship pursuit. Usually the Iron Bowl means more, but, you know, I mean, to those fan bases, I think it's very, very similar. You know, even if there's not national stakes to the Egg Bowl, you know, to those fans, it's the same as the Iron Bowl.
Yeah, I am curious to see, like, I've always felt like Mississippi State maximizes when they really, like, lean into the hating Ole Miss. It does feel like Levy's kind of like following the Mullen playbook a little bit. Instead of like the school up north, but it's like it's the constant jabs and whatnot. And like, I think that's probably pretty smart in terms of motivating a fan base that I felt like at the end of last year, like they were just kind of like apathetic.
Well, and I think you have to, right? Like, if you're Mississippi State, you have to lean into something. And I think leaning into the hatred of Ole Miss and saying, like, we're the blue collar, no one respects
people school.
I think you have to lean into that. Like, you can't ignore it if you're Mississippi State. I mean, I know they got like the swag is state thing, but like, I think that's going to kind of die down. Like, no one really believes swag is state. Like, people believe, you know, hating Ole Miss and blue collar outworking, like that type of stuff is state, quite frankly. And you can be fun offensively. I mean, I think that's the thing. You can still be really fun on offense and have that kind of mentality. My question with Levy and Mississippi State is they're going to be running basically the same system that Tennessee and Ole Miss operate.
Yeah.
But you're going to be doing it with lesser players than Tennessee and Ole Miss. So the system works. I mean, we've seen the system work everywhere. And I think it's going to be one heck of a lot more exciting than what we saw in their lone season under Zach Arnett when the offense had no punch. But I just wonder, like, you're running the same thing as two other programs in your conference, and you're doing it with a lesser caliber of player on average. I think that's a tough road to hoe, but it's always a tough road to hoe for Mississippi State. And they've done, you know, in the last dozen years, I mean, they've landed some punches, whether it was with Mullen or Leach. But those were two really good coaches. I mean, I think Mississippi State fans don't always like to admit that or don't always like to hear that with Mullen because, you know, he was always flirting with the exit and eventually did leave. But I still think Dan Mullen's a really good coach who punched above his weight at Mississippi State, and then he goes to three New Year's Six Bowls and four seasons at Florida before it kind of jumped the rails there. But and then Mike Leach was made for that job. I mean, he spent his career coaching at places like Mississippi State. I mean, he was perfect for that job. And I just think they've made it look easy with Mullen and Leach. I think it actually is, though, a really hard job. Doesn't mean Levy can't do it, but I think those two guys, Mullen and Leach, made it look easier than what the job really is.
Yeah, because yesterday we were kind of discussing, like, expectations. And it's like, with Mississippi State, you know, you run through the schedule. It's like, okay, Eastern Kentucky at Arizona State, but Arizona State's roster is horrible. Toledo. I mean, you can start 3-0, and then, like, Florida's improved, but, like, I guess that's one you can get. Then you're hoping, I guess, you get some combination of Arkansas, UMass. Like, I feel like if you get to a bowl, I feel like, right, that's the expectation. Like, the fan base, if they went 6-6, I think the fan base would feel good about year two.
I think so, especially on the heels of how bad last year was. And last year was bad and boring.
Yeah, it's the worst, yeah.
It really is. Like, if you're bad and interesting, no, fan bases don't want to stay bad and interesting. They want to be somewhat relevant and interesting. But bad and interesting is better than bad and boring. And they were the absolute worst combination of bad and boring last year. And they had a veteran quarterback who had been pretty decent with Mike Leach and Will Rogers. He regressed. And you knew this guy could be better because you'd seen him do it year after year with Mike Leach. He wasn't going to win the Heisman, but the air raid and Mike Leach and Will Rogers was a good marriage. And then they tried to change things. They did change things. They go away from the air raid. I get that they wanted to move away from it long term. Zach Arnett, maybe he only has one shot to be a head coach. You want to do it your way, but it didn't work, and it was a bad look because you knew what Will Rogers could do with the air raid, and it was almost like, could you not have just brought in an offensive coordinator who knows how to run the air raid and let your quarterback, who's the best thing you have going offensively, who knows how to run the air raid, run the stinking air raid? But like I said, I get it. You get one shot to be a head coach. You want to do it your way. Everybody does it that way, but it looked really bad when it didn't work because you'd seen what that quarterback could do before, and then you saw what he was trying to do in a different offense. And yeah, he had some injury issues, but I don't think that system fit the personnel at State last year.
No, but I give them full credit for pulling the plug too. You know what I mean? Like it's not going to work. And oftentimes people like talk themselves into it. It's like, no, you pulled the plug, and I think they made a good hire. Like I think it's all about trying to establish some momentum going into year two. Like that's what it feels like for me.
Yeah, and even though I say they're trying to run the same system as Ole Miss and Tennessee with lesser players, that doesn't mean it's not worthwhile. Like I think you know, if you can be 7-5, 8-4 with this system, and yeah, it's going to be a struggle to be at the top of the SEC as it always is at Mississippi State. It's going to get tougher with Texas and Oklahoma in the league, but the system does work, and it's worked at places that historically weren't particularly relevant. I mean, we think of Baylor as relevant now, but that's only because this exact system under Art Briles was used and made them relevant. So it has worked other places. It is actually more similar to what Mike Leach was doing. Leach didn't have the tempo, but there is a lot of overlap between Leach's air raid and the Art Briles system that Jeff Lebby runs. So, you know, to a degree, we've already kind of seen this minus the tempo, at Mississippi State under Mike Leach. So I do think it's a worthwhile shot overall. Like I said, I think it's a little bit tough because you're always compared to Ole Miss in that state and they run a similar system and they're just on average going to have a little bit higher caliber player, at least in terms of, you know, the analyst assessment, but doesn't mean it's not a worthwhile experiment under Jeff Lebby. I would rather have this if I'm Mississippi State than some guy who's been like a really good defensive coordinator for 10 years and you're taking a shot on him. Like
Jeremy Pruitt.
Exactly. Yeah. This interests me more than hiring whoever the current version of Jeremy Pruitt is. I don't even know who that is. I don't know if there's a great comp right now, but I'm sure there's someone out there that's a good comp to that.
Muschamp's still available at that.
What's that?
Muschamp's probably still available.
Oh, I'm sure, yes. Muschamp would be a good comp.
The other thing I was thinking about, because before we get to, like, Tennessee, if you're an Arkansas fan, are you rooting for the turnaround, or are you rooting for this to stop? Like, I know it's hard to, like, root for your team to lose, but, like, I think about it in these terms. I don't really think Daniel Jones is nearly as bad as maybe the narrative is, but I'm just kind of ready for a new quarterback. You know what I mean? As a Giants fan, like... Mm-hmm. If you're an Arkansas fan, are you just kind of ready for a new coach?
I think they probably are. And I think it's one of those things where certain situations, by the time you're ready for a new coach, you absolutely can't stand the guy. I mean, when Butch Jones came on camera at the end of his tenure for Tennessee fans, I mean, I think they just wanted to throw up. And I think there were other, there's been other situations like that. I don't think it's like that with Arkansas.
No, I think they actually like Pittman, and there is stuff to like.
Yeah, and I think they want to give him every opportunity, not just the administration, but the fan base. Like, they wanted this guy to succeed. I just think where the fan base is at, they saw enough last year to believe that it's not going to succeed. And so it's like, you don't hope Sam Pittman falls off a cliff, which Tennessee fans might have been hoping Butch Jones did that by the end of his tenure. Like no, go enjoy your buyout, go to the lake, retire, be happy, or go coach offensive line somewhere. No hard feelings, whatever. But I think most Arkansas fans are like, they've come to the realization that it's probably not going to work. So it's like, thanks for the memories, thanks for the 9-4 season, thanks for that win over Texas in 2021 that the fan base will celebrate for years to come. But I think a vast majority of that fan base doesn't believe it's going to work long term. And so it's like, let's get to the part of starting over and hiring a new coach. I mean, Arkansas is a weird one because we've not seen Arkansas and the SEC be what they were in the Southwest Conference, but we've seen Arkansas be pretty darn good. And I think I just wonder, could they ever get back to that point? I don't know. I mean, the SEC West at that time was not what it later became. Now there's no divisions. Texas and Oklahoma are in. I don't know if Arkansas can get back to that point whenever it was humming with Bobby Petrino. But I do think they can be better than they were last year, and better than they were with Chad Morris. And I think the fan base believes that too. And I don't think they're unreasonable to think, like, if you're Arkansas's coach, you should be able to rip off some 8-4 seasons, which Pittman did for a couple of years. But the bottom's falling out, and I think the perception is setting in with Sam Pittman that it was more the coordinators than it was him. You know, when he had Kendall Briles and Barry Odom as his two coordinators, Kendall Briles in particular did a really nice job there with KJ Jefferson. And as bad of a coach as Chad Morris was, he actually left some pretty talented guys behind. Like, I think Pittman's roster in his first couple seasons was more talented than it is probably right now. Morris could recruit. He was a disaster at everything else. And so then Pittman comes in, inherits a better-than-expected crop of players, makes a couple good coordinator hires in Briles and Odom, and it works, better than expected for a few seasons. But then both coordinators leave, Chad Morris's players leave, and the shine is off.
I am a little surprised. I thought it'd be a better job in the NIL era.
As much
money's up there, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it could be a better job. I mean, that's a sneaky good place to coach college sports. You're the only Power 5 school or Power 4 school in your whole state. There's a lot of money, which people that haven't been to Northwest Arkansas, I don't think totally realize, but there's a lot of money in that corner of the state.
Everything is new.
What's that?
Everything is new.
Yes. Yeah, and as we're seeing with John Calipari, like, there are boosters that, when they want to, can really get behind something and make it happen. I think Arkansas is the number two basketball job in the conference. I would put it behind Kentucky. There's a bigger gap between one and two than there is between two and three. But I think basketball, I would put Arkansas as the number two job in the conference. Football, I think it's middle of the pack. It might, you know, with Texas and Oklahoma in, it's probably in the lower half of the conference. But it's not a horrible job. It's not a place where you can't win. It's not a place where you can't have 9-3 seasons. I don't know that they can get back to what they were for a few years there with Petrino. And I don't think Petrino is the answer. I mean, I know it's a great media narrative, and if Pittman gets fired, I'm sure there's a chance Petrino becomes the interim coach, and maybe it's even a trial run for him. But I really don't believe this ends with him becoming the permanent head coach. He might be the interim for the second half of the season. I don't think that's where this lands. And I think if it did land there, that would be a disaster. You can't rewind the clock to 15 years ago.
He did it at Louisville.
What's that?
Barry did it at Louisville. It kind of worked for that second time a little bit, and then it fell apart again. But I'm with you. This is the other thing I was thinking about. Because we're in peak expectation season.
Yes.
In your mind, what fan base do you think is setting themselves up for the most disappointment?
That's a good one, because there's probably people everywhere doing that.
I mean, fan expectation is always going to be high, but like to me, it's like what I think is going to be fascinating is, have we reached a point this year with like Ole Miss where if they don't make the playoff, like nothing's happening, obviously, to Lane, whatnot. Like, you know what I mean? Sure. But it does feel like that's kind of going to be a disappointing year.
I agree. I had three names kind of crystallizing in my mind as I was thinking about this. Ole Miss, Tennessee, and Missouri.
Okay, so we got the same idea then.
Yeah, because I think it's those fan bases. Like, from the outside, Ole Miss has the best chance of making the playoffs of those three, but it's not a slam dunk. And I think only one of the three will make the playoffs. I will take Ole Miss. I think it's going to be Ole Miss of that three. I don't think multiples of those three will make it. No rule that says they can't. I don't think it's going to happen. But I think all three fan bases think they're making the playoff. And so I think two of the three are setting themselves up for disappointment. I think Missouri, they had such a storybook season last year. Everything kind of broke their way. They were a good team that had a really, really good record. But I don't think they were – we've talked about this before. I don't think they were an 11-win good team. I think they were probably like – an 8-4, 9-3 type of team that had all the breaks go their way, caught a fortunate schedule and won 11 games. But now the fan base, they're looking at that schedule. They're thinking, we're coming off the heels of an 11-win season. They're going to the playoffs. And I don't think it's going to be that simple. They do have a cakewalk of a schedule, but some of those coin flip games that fell their way last year at home at Furrow Field, what if they go the other way this year? I'm thinking the Kansas State and Florida games. I mean, both those games probably should have been losses for Missouri.
I'm fine giving them the Kansas State game. The Florida one definitely should have been a lot. You know what I mean? The Kansas State game, like, was no one really ever took control of the game. Like, that one, like, that's a coin flip going your way. Florida worked so hard to lose that game that it still blows my mind.
Absolutely. And everybody's overlooking, I think, the loss of Cody Schrader. It's just like, well, the offensive line's still really good, so you can plug another 1,800-yard running back in there. Like, no. I mean, 1,800 yards is... that's really hard to attain. It's not plug and play. If it was that easy, then why did Cody Schrader play like 90% of the snaps for Missouri last year? They knew the number two running back wasn't any good. And so now they brought in another transfer from Georgia State who had a nice career at Georgia State. But there's no guarantee he's going to rush for 1,800 yards like Cody Schrader did. So I think Missouri is probably a 9-3 type of team, which is a good season for Missouri. But I think the fan base has convinced themselves they're going to the playoffs, and they have the schedule to do it. I just don't know if the breaks are going to go all their way like they did last year. And for Tennessee, I think Tennessee fans look at the schedule and say, okay, they'll lose to Georgia on the road. Maybe they lose to Alabama at home, but they're beating everyone else, and they're going 10-2. I think Tennessee fans are overlooking that Week 4 road game in Norman. I think Oklahoma is going to have a pretty good roster with an incredibly tough schedule. But, I mean, if the betting line was set today, Oklahoma would be favored in Norman against Tennessee. And I think Tennessee fans are looking at that as a win. I also think Tennessee fans are not considering the possibility of a road loss at South Carolina like they had a couple years ago. They don't play South Carolina this year, but, I mean, a game like
right,
that. Where you have it in the win column in your mind, but – you know, for all that Josh Heupel's done well the last 3 years, he has had those games where, you know, once a season he goes on the road and they shoot themselves in the foot and they're terrible in a road game and they lose it. You know, South Carolina 2 years ago.
Missouri last year.
Yeah, Missouri, they got clubbed over the head. The schedule doesn't have a lot of obvious games like that. I know we were saying we don't think Arkansas is going to be particularly good this year, but I do look at that one. That's in Fayetteville. I mean, Tennessee fans are looking at that as like a 100% win. That's one of those sneaky games like at South Carolina a couple years ago. I don't put that 100% in the win column. And if it's not there, you know, maybe it's NC State at neutral site in Charlotte. Like, I think there are other possibilities where they lose one that you would expect them to win. And I just think the Oklahoma game, that's a critical one for Tennessee. If they beat Oklahoma, then I'm warming up to the idea of Tennessee to the playoffs. If they lose at Oklahoma in week four, it doesn't knock them out, but in my mind, I think it means that they're a little bit more on the outside looking in, and that's kind of the way I'm projecting it.
I mean, to me, it means if they lose that one, then you're going to have to split with Georgia and Bama.
Right, and I know Bama's at home. Neyland Stadium will be rocking that day. It's not that they can't do it. We saw them do it a couple years ago, and Bama's going to be gettable this year, but I think Bama's still going to be really good. You know, I think right after Saban retired, a couple guys transfer, everybody's licking their chops that this is the year to beat Bama. Bama's still a top five, top eight type of program going into the season, so they're still going to be darn good.
Blake, have a great weekend, buddy.
Okay, thanks, you too.
That is Blake Topmeyer, an SEC columnist for the USA Today Sports Network.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games and a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey, and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.